Are you thinking about getting into Dungeons & Dragons? Maybe you're looking to expand your horizons as a DM or a player. If that's the case, then it's time for you to check out The Dungeon Cast, the best D&D podcast out there that helps you passively learn all about the game just by listening. Join co-hosts Will and Brian as they break down the lore of a rich multiverse 50 years in the making in a lighthearted and beginner-friendly way. They cover everything from character creation options to tips for dungeon masters. There's something for everyone, no matter how long you've been playing TTRPGs. Find The Dungeon Cast anywhere you get podcasts or on YouTube.
Everyone, and welcome to this spoiler review for episode 7 of X-Men 97 Bright Eyes here on the here on a special episode of Geek Bites brought to you by the
Geek
Buddies.
Sorry, I'm highly caffeinated, and I'm in Vancouver. It's just a wild morning up here.
You're hanging out in the Canada as we do this review, and thank you so much for taking time, Mike. I know you're there doing some fun stuff with one of our friends, so enjoying a little set visit, shall I say. We're not going to reveal anything, just a set visit, that's all, right?
It was a very super set visit that I had, and I'm having a very nice time up in Canada for a few days with one of our good buddies, and it's super geeky and fun, but despite all of that, and despite being on set until 1 a.m., we came back to the hotel last night, and at 1 a.m., put on X-Men 97. We actually made the mistake on set at about, like, 12:45. I was casually opening Twitter just as I was, like, watching things happen, and I was like, oh, shit, and realized that the episode had already dropped, and I had to stop Twitter immediately and run home and watch it. So we did.
Right on. Well, let's jump into it, man. Let's not waste any time. That's Mike Vogel. I'm John Rocha. Let's get into it. Bright Eyes, episode 7 of X-Men 97. Mike, this is the episode we were hoping to see after all the events of Genosha, but of course, a bit of a detour last episode, but that detour came back and paid fruits and dividends by the end of this particular episode. But certainly episode 7, very much focused on Rogue, very much focused on her rage and anger and grief, very much focused on the X-Men processing their rage and anger and grief at what happened at Genosha. We see Sunspot and Jubilee essentially having a coming out scene, which was really interesting, and then had a weird twist, uncomfortable twist by the end. And then we find out that Bastion has been behind this the whole time, using Mr. Sinister to get overall revenge on the X-Men, and he's turning these people into human sentinels, which is a massive, interesting new concept to throw into X-Men 97 itself, but of course borrowing from the comics this storyline, because we're about to jump into the 3-episode arc that's going to lead us into the end of the season. This is almost like issue 0 of the start for this particular storyline. So what did you think of this overall episode, Mike? What were your thoughts and feelings on it?
Well, I said it before, and I will say it again, and I'm sure I'm going to say it for the next 3 weeks. This show packs so fucking much into one episode that it's making every other show look slow and plodding by comparison. Like, it is wild the amount. Like, you could do there's a version of this series where you do an episode that is just devoted to Rogue's rage, and at the end she and Kurt have a nice talk, and then at the end we tease something, or you do an episode that just deals with the after effects of Genosha. But like, this was like after effects of Genosha. Scott and Jean are still having problems. Rogue is going wild. Oh, by the way, there's Bastion. There's Bolivar Trask. Nope, there's not Bolivar Trask. He's a Sentinel now. Oh shit. And like, it was just insane. And within all of that, there's this episode. Every episode of this series has a ton of Easter eggs. This episode has a ton of Easter eggs and things to talk about, but I think we would be remiss if we just jumped into the geeky stuff and didn't talk about what I think is the best thing about this episode, which is they are – this whole series thus far is about really putting Charles Xavier's dream to the test.
Yeah.
I mean, this is and just every episode has just ramped it up a little bit. Like, at the very beginning, Cyclops is very focused on still fulfilling Scott's dream. Then we have the Magneto episode where everything happens at the UN. Storm gets shot and Magneto really has that amazing speech where it's the whole, you know, don't let me let you down. And then it just leads to Genosha. And in the after effects of Genosha, we see each of our characters. We see Cyclops talking to the president. And the president's like, I'd love to help you with all those dead bodies. But, you know, optics.
Optics.
And we've got Rogue going to Captain America, who's like, hey, I want to help you, but my hands are tied with the government, so I don't know. And then even Beast and Trish Chilby, which I think was one of the most affecting, you have this moment where she's like, she basically says what a lot of people said during the pandemic and George Floyd about rioting. And she's like, you know, if people don't feel safe, they're not going to tolerate you guys. Beast, who is maybe one of Professor X's most loyal, I'm on board with the dream, was kind of like, hey, fuck you.
Yeah.
So I think we're seeing the title of the last three episodes is Tolerance is Extinction, part 1, 2, and 3. And I think we are seeing a show that was created by a gay black writer really taking the idea of when the minority is oppressed and everyone else is like, could you just be a little nicer so we can tolerate you, what that really feels like. And I think it's been that we'll keep touching on it when we get to the individual scenes, but it's hard because you've got Rogue's video game kick, you've got Captain America showing up, you've got all these amazing Easter eggs and nods. But I think what's happening underneath is this is a show that's deconstructing what X-Men is really about and really challenging the idea of what it means for mutants to run around going, please tolerate us. And I think that's kind of the thing that's making the show the A+, everyone talking about it show that it is.
I think that's an excellent point you bring up, Michael, of course, because we've always kind of like the thing that we always bought into when we were growing up reading the X-Men comics is this idealistic version of what could be, right? What could be within X-Men, just like what could be within our world. What would it be like to have a world that's open and accepting and everyone is equal, and can we function on the same level playing field and everyone has the same opportunities? And that's what we aspire to. That's what we dream for, right? But the last few years certainly have shown us all across the world and in our country that those ideas, those aspirations can be ridiculed, made fun of. People use them to twist the narrative, twist the foundation of those for their own personal benefit. So how does this dream from the 1960s transition into the 2024 TV watching audience to watch a show like this? Well, we got to deal with it, not just live in the puppy eyed dreams of what's possible. Here's the reality. Here's the battle. Here's the debates that we can have. And I love that it's not shy, you know, because we've seen shows even within the Marvel Universe present topics and shy away from the deeper aspects of them, or getting too deep in the weeds, or being afraid to offend people. This show is so unabashedly in your face. And there's even a line here, right, where Sunspot says, see what happens when we come out and we put it in their face. When you've heard that line from certain people towards the LGBTQ community, towards Black Lives Matter, towards Me Too movement, all that kind of stuff. So they're very clear about what their point of view is. And I kind of respect and admire that, because they're doing it artistically well as well, Michael. It isn't just boom. It's actually with good artists.
When Sunspot said, this is what happens when we shove it in their faces, I was like, ooh. and then when Trish Tilby, like that one really got Trish, me when she was like, well, you know, it's just people don't feel safe with all the rioting and everything that's going on. And Beast is sitting there like, we are standing in the wreckage of the death of thousands of my people.
Yeah.
And you're like, well, could they not be so mad? Could they maybe not be so upset? Maybe that would be better for us. Like, and so, again, when X-Men is one of those really elastic ideas, to your point, in the 60s, it was really about racism.
Right.
Then in the 90s into the 2000s and the Grant Morrison run, they really kind of like shifted a little bit and kind of really embraced the LGBTQ aspect of it as well. X2 has that amazing Bobby Drake coming out scene.
Yep.
And this just really feels like, and it's exactly what Beau DeMaio said after episode 5 when he wrote about his inspirations for what he wanted to do with this show and with that Genosha episode in particular, with touching on what it feels like in a post 9/11 world, touching what it feels like when we live through shootings like the Pulse nightclub, and that feeling and our mutants right now in this show, and Rogue particularly in this episode really getting to the breaking point. You're like, we always want our good guys to be the best versions of us, but with the mutants in particular, and in the mutants in this animated episode or series most specifically, it's like, how far can you push them until you're like, enough is enough? And I think that's what we're really building to.
Well, let's go into the Rogue storyline, because that's the really predominant one throughout this entire episode. We see this beginning with this funeral. Rogue is not there, right? Kirk is doing a wonderful job delivering the eulogy. It's been nice to see Nightcrawler become more a part of the show here over the last few episodes, and did a wonderful eulogy. And the way he played with the cards, analogies, and all of that, I thought that was brilliant. And then Jubilee breaking down there, we see. So she's not there to kind of be consoled or anything. She is taken off. She is angry. She is rage-induced. She goes into this government facility. She destroys everybody, goes up to Thunderbolt Ross and says, where the hell is Bolivar Trask who's the other guy?
Henry Geirich.
That's the guy. Where are these guys? Blah, blah, blah. Gets the information, heads over to Mexico City, goes and talks to Cap, rather, has the back and forth with Cap, goes toe-to-toe with Cap, gets mad, shoots through, tosses his shield out of the way, heads to Mexico City, destroys the people there in Mexico City, and then confronts Geirich, and then takes his power, and then she gets completely knocked out. Of course, we find out later, I think Geirich is, that there was something connected with Geirich. What's going on? We're going to find that a little bit later. And then Nightcrawler's there to console her, and she has this massive breakdown, which is what you experience. Something triggers, finally, the grief to let it go, and she lets it go. They end up, and the team is there to console her. Then they end up later confronting Bolivar Trask. And when he jumps, she saves him. They're a Madripoor. But then when he says, I got nothing else for you, she lets him go, and he becomes this human sentinel and knocks her out first. So an interesting storyline here for Rogue, with some uncomfortable stuff that we have to come to terms with, essentially torturing people to get the information that she needs, but we also kind of understand why she's in this place. So it asks questions of a lot of us. What did you think of the storyline here of Rogue throughout this episode?
I mean, A plus for a couple of reasons. One, to your point, this is what's interesting. Like, you watch your superheroes, and look, I, as a big Superman fan, I love the story where Superman is pushed to the edge, but he's still not going to cross that line because he's Superman.
Right.
But I also love the story when an oppressed minority is pushed to the edge, and it's like, you know, when we're like, and Morph even says it at the end when she drops Bolivar Trask. Morph's like, is this who we are now? Like, is this what we're doing? But given what the journey that we've watched Rogue go on, you're kind of like, I mean, I get it. So and that's that feeling of I know that as the good guys and as the person who wants the good guys to be good, I know how I'm supposed to feel.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I get it. And I don't think those two ideas pushing up against each other is like at the core of, I think, what X-Men is really about when it's at its best. So the fact that this Rogue story really pushed it to that limit, great seeing the funeral, not great seeing the funeral at the beginning, but I really love that they opened on the funeral, that we sort of lingered on the grief. I love that we had the Thieves Guild there from the Gambit episodes.
Belladonna.
And I love Kurt being religious.
Yeah,
I love that Kurt Wagner is, through everything, like, that his faith is one of those things that's so important to him. And I love that the show is really letting him be that.
Yeah.
So that's amazing to me. And then, the Jubilee getting upset and Logan being like, grief is its own thing. And then cutting to this amazing sequence where Rogue is just like, I don't give a fuck.
Yeah.
I give no fucks. I don't care. I'm done with this. This is an American top secret facility. This is not in some foreign country that we made up. This is a U.S. facility. Yeah. And she just breaks it down. And then having Thunderbolt Ross be the guy in there. And then I just love, as just a reminder of how strong Rogue is, he's like, guys, we built this place to keep the Hulk in. Like, there's no way. And then she just fucking slams in there. It's great. And then to, again, have that. And then, again, as we're talking about the things that people say, when he's like, aren't you supposed to be one of the good guys? And she's like, you killed all them. And now you got me. Like, it was just like everything that was written in this episode was like, ooh, that's sharp. That's great. And like I said, the Captain America scene, another amazing Easter egg. Josh Keaton kind of reprising the role of Steve Rogers, as he's been doing in the What If series, doing a great job.
Yeah.
But it's that classic push and pull between the X-Men and the Avengers when mutant shit comes up.
Yeah.
Because Cap, as much as we all love Cap, and Cap is Cap, at the end of the day, he's like, look, I don't condone going off and killing people or doing this. Like, we got to do things by the book. We got to do things by the rules. I'm on your side here, but I can't help you. And he helps her enough. Like, you get this information, you see the OZT, which we're gonna find out next week is Operation Zero Tolerance.
Right.
But we see the breadcrumbs that are gonna lead Rogue where she needs to go. But we also see that, you know, he's like, well, we're gonna go back and we're gonna report on this and I'm gonna get my orders. And she's like, no, we gotta go do this now. And when he's like, I can't help you, she does. If you've ever gotten mad at somebody on a soccer field and just kicked the soccer ball as far as you could and been like, well, fuck you. She does the superhero version of that and says, here, boom, and just throws the shield out of spite.
Yeah.
Just like, hey, fuck you. And so, you know, as she goes through the things, and then, you know, we're slowly building these breadcrumbs too. When she does go to Henry Gyrick and, like, you know, look at his mind, we get a brief flash of Bastion, which is what we're gonna find, and a brief flash of Nimrod, which we're getting into that territory of weird X-Men shit that even I am like, okay, wait, Bastion, let's review Bastion again. But
it's deep.
I think they're gonna handle it really well in the same way that they handled, like, the Madeline Pryor stuff. They've already proven they can handle some really complicated things and sort of streamline it in a really cool way. But, you know, we get to this whole thing and then ultimately getting together with the rest of the team, having that amazing grief moment with Kurt, and then following the breadcrumbs to Bolivar Trask. And like you said, you know, you're faced with this now. Sentinels were bad enough. We've seen what regular Sentinels and a giant master mold Sentinel can do. And now we see these, like, super high tech Sentinels, and Bolivar Trask does the argument of, I built giant killer robots just to protect us. I didn't really know it was going to be this bad, which, you know, is the Oppenheimer.
I was going to say,
I built the most destructive thing in the world to protect America. Oh God, what have I unleashed? So while a bit on the nose, the Oppenheimer quote is not wrong. And then, look, despite the fact that Bolivar Trask technically survives because he's secretly a Sentinel, it doesn't change the fact that Rogue killed him.
Rogue let him die.
Like, the decision that Rogue made, despite the fact that through weird Sentinel tech we got to take backsies, like, she made that decision. She, to your point, she rescued him, asked him for information, and when he's like, I got nothing, she's like, then fuck you, and just dropped him.
Right.
And like I said, Morph kind of saying, is this who we are? Like, we are just watching the X-Men fracture across the board, like, everyone almost across the board in this team is like, what do we do? And so we're really building to, and Storm hasn't even showed up yet, we're really building to this. When Bastion's revealed, when this whole plan is revealed, and you've got these high-tech Sentinels that Cable is going to tell us are going to lead to this horrible thing, and we're going to reveal Nimrod and get into all of that, which we'll talk about in a second. But the emotional part of this is, well, then we've got to kill everyone. Like, you know, what do you do? Yeah. Like, when we are, like, faced again, when we're up against the wall and our very existence is threatened, and all we want to do is fight back, but the human population is like, well, if you fight back, it's going to freak us out, and then we can't really accept you.
Right.
What the fuck do you do?
Can't you be one of the good ones? Yeah.
Yeah, can't you be one of the good ones?
Can't you smile more? Why do you have to be so aggressive, so in your face?
Why do you have to push your agenda? Can't you just do what you want to do at home, but don't hold somebody's hand out in the street? Like, you can go down the list of the things that minorities have been told, you know, that this show is just, like, not being subtle about in all the best ways.
Yeah, agreed. And for those of you wondering about the sound, Michael is in Vancouver at a hotel. It sounds like there's construction going on, so we apologize from the audio.
It's
not a microphone situation. So,
yeah, guys, there's something happening in this hotel room, and it is about to drive me crazy.
Vancouver. All right, well, speaking of the team, let's move to the team here, because already we already spoke about the funeral. There were some really cool exchanges back there, and I really like Nightcrawler telling Wolverine, hey, man, you weren't there. We were. She's crying for more than just the loss of Kurt. It was what she saw, which is this future where they're hunted even more so. Mutants are hunted even more so, and their lives are much more in danger than they used to be. And we all feel that in our world nowadays for some of our some of our community. So I love that was kind of highlighted, but not hammered home as strongly as they needed to do it. So, and then we follow the team here, right? As I said, we got Scott and Jean. They're having their interaction. Scott has the interaction with the president, as you said, the optics situation, and he hangs up on the president. Oh my, That's power. He hangs up on the president. They head out to Genosha because the president says he can't send any more people to search for mutants because it's getting to that point where, you know, we're not finding anybody. We need to move on. And tensions are a little fraught right now. So they head off and they go to Genosha, as you said, Beast. And Beast playing a hand. You know, Beast kind of been passive, trying to be the best of everyone. In this episode, he finally has some comments, as you said, with Trish Tilby. But we also see Scott and Jen find Emma Frost, and bring her out and have a little exchange there that she's always good under pressure. So that's going to be interesting to see itself play out. And what is her new power that she's discovered, which Beast kind of highlights here as well. Scott apologizes to Jean. So maybe the beginning of repairing this relationship, allusions to stuff in the past. How Jean's always come back from all these things. And then, of course, as I said, they follow Rogue down and they console her there in Mexico. And then they end up in Madripoor here because Bolivar Trask reaches out to them and they have what happens in Madripoor and they fight the human sentinel there. And then we find out about Bastion. So your thoughts on the X-Men team themselves and how they progress through this entire show today?
Yeah, I mean, like, I think it's what we were saying. I mean, with the Scott scene with the president, with them getting to Genosha, I mean, you're just watching at every turn in the wake of this massive tragedy that should, by all means, bring everybody behind to mutants and be like, whatever you guys need, like, we cannot allow this to happen. And you're watching the opposite happen. And you're watching them sort of feel isolated. That feeling of like the UN is behind us. They've brought Genosha in. It's a new era. This feels amazing. The rug has been pulled out from under all of them. But in the wake of all that, Scott and Jean doing a little bit better. I mean, you know, like, Madeline's gone. Jean kind of touches on that with Scott, saying she knows how important that Madeline was to him. Because she caught them psychic cheating, so she knows. and that she kind of loved the idea of having a sit, like, that they kind of discussed the death of Madeline and discussed like how, you know, Scott's like, we've never been this bad before. And she kind of goes down the list of like, yeah, we've been through some shit. But he's like, but you always came back. And like, so again, Scott and Jean, they're checking all the boxes on these two. They go through the shit, but like, all right, looks like we're back together. And then they find Emma, which anyone who loves Emma Frost loves that we saw Emma in her diamond form. You know, Grant Morrison sort of made up the second mutation thing because he wanted Emma. I believe he actually wanted to use Colossus for something in his run, and he couldn't use Colossus. So he's like, fuck it, I'm going to make Emma diamond. And then he did that instead. But that has stuck, and we all love it. So seeing Emma in her diamond form, yet cracked, saying she's great under pressure, just made every Emma Frost fan squeal in delight, because all we want is a whole lot more of Emma Frost. And a whole lot of more of Emma Frost, who is super pissed off about what happened to her and really pissed off about the tragedy of Genosha, which is a big part of Emma Frost's character. Like, we're shaping up to get the Emma that we've all always wanted. And I am personally very, very here for it. And then, like we said, as the rest of the team kind of catches up with Rogue and they all head to Madripoor, they're just kind of faced with, it's getting worse. Genosha was bad. And now look at these abominations that we've discovered in this like mad scientist laboratory. And now Bolivar Trask is a sentinel that's super, super powerful, so that then Cable has to come back. And then you get the Scott Jean Cable moment when Jean gets in Nathan's head and he's like, you're not my mom, get the fuck out of my head. So like, it's just all of the drama and soap opera just piled on.
You okay?
Yeah, I'm okay.
Okay. You stopped for a second, so I didn't know what happened. So go ahead. Keep
going. Listen, man, I don't know what to tell you. Vancouver is beautiful. But the Wi-Fi and the noises coming out of this hotel, not my favorite right now.
It's something. All right, keep going, brother. Keep going. Anything else to add to what you were saying?
Well, I mean, are we going to talk about the Jubilee Sunspot separately? Or do you want me to like
bring it up? Yeah, let's talk about.
Just like, I think that the Sunspot stuff was really great because it seems like it's the next step in evolution, if you will, from the Bobby Drake scene from X-Men 2. Bobby Drake in X-Men 2, you know, they did sort of the classic coming out scene as a mutant. And it was the, I'm a mutant. Are you sure you're a mutant? Maybe this is just a phase. And so they did like the classic coming out scene where Bobby's family ultimately wasn't very accepting of him. And so I think taking it to this next phase of Roberto's mom, and there are a lot of people in the LGBTQ community that have dealt with this, which is, oh no, we always knew you were gay. That's totally fine. Yeah. Let's just never tell anybody about it. I mean, like, we accept you. We totally accept you. You're fine. Let's just not ever talk about it again. And you keep it super secret. And as long as you do what you want to do behind closed doors, just don't go out and like advertise it, because we have a lot of investors.
Yeah.
And so I think, again, it's presenting that more complicated shade. And I think all of this with all of the humans, we definitely have like the friends of humanity that we had in the beginning of the first episode. And we have those people that are, I hate mutants, get out, you're the worst. But what this show's really exploring, whether it be through Val Cooper, through the president, through Trish Tilby, through Roberto's mom, is no, we know mutants exist and we want to help you to this degree, but we're not going to do this much. But we want to tolerate you, but we don't want to fully embrace.
Yeah. I think this is what's great, Mike. It's the progression. Okay, you're an ally, but how much of an ally are you? And are you only an ally as long as it's safe, right? From the president to Trish to Roberto's mom to anyone else who was commenting, like, how much of an ally are you? How much of an ally are you really? You know, and those are those questions. It isn't just asking like for the bait. Like the idea that the base is what you should do has to be over. And I think the show is kind of saying that, like, you can't just do the bare minimum. There's a requirement now because the threat has increased. And with the threat increasing, the allyship needs to increase as well. And I think the show is making a very strong stance on that. Whether you agree or like it or not, the show is unabashedly calling certain people out on purpose who are using things that you've heard before from people in your own life. So, like you said, do you have to be gay in church? Can't you be gay behind closed doors? Can't you be this or that behind closed doors? So it's this idea of hiding, right? Oh, the shareholders. Because initially it's a great coming out. And you're like, oh, wow, this is the Michael Vogel coming out. Everyone's happy. Everyone knows it's not a big deal. And then she twists it by saying, well, can you keep it under wraps? Let's find new ways to hide your allegiances and your alliances, or else, you know, the shareholders, and this idea of upsetting people. Again, I can't make a stance because it affects my bottom line.
Right.
How are you really making a stance? You know, and so I love that the show is unabashed in calling that out, and I appreciate that for sure. Let's move on to the Bastion stuff. As you said, Michael, that is stripping away, going knee deep into this stuff. I'll do a quick bio on Bastion. People don't know it is a mutant hating machine that emerged from the chaos of battle. He is a fusion of Nimrod and Master Mold here, and this following a fight with the X-Men and through the mystical energy of the Siege. Perilous, he was reborn in a human-looking body. He was taken in by the compassionate Rose Gilberti, taking up the name Sebastian Gilberti, and his evolution escalated with the inception of Operation Zero Tolerance, and his path soon diverged towards anti-mutant sentiments, aligning himself with Graydon Creed's Friends of Humanity, as you mentioned earlier. And he's part of the he orchestrated the clandestine transformation of humans into prime sentinels who want to wipe out all of mutant kind. So there's a quick bio. Michael, your thoughts on how them introducing this thing and Magneto being alive at the end?
Yes. So, okay. So important things to know about Bastion. One, Nimrod is a mutant-killing robot from an alternate future who is a great, weird, funky character. And so Bastion in the comics is a mix of Master Mold, which we've seen the Master Mold. We've seen Bolivar Trask's Master Mold Sentinel, and this Nimrod from the future, who we've seen flashes of in the opening credits. And when Rogue touched Henry Gyrick, we saw it hit Nimrod in our inner mind. So it's with all the time travel stuff with Bishop at the beginning, taking Nathan Summers into the future, and then Nathan Summers coming back as Cable to stop stuff. Like, Nimrod showing up is also a robot from the future showing up, and somehow like Nimrod and the Master Mold kind of turn Bastion into Bastion. So whether there's a bunch of time travel shit going on to sort of get us to the Bastion point.
Yeah.
But basically a combination of Master Mold that we've seen and Nimrod, this mutant killing robot that we've sort of seen glimpses of, combined to make Bastion. And he runs OZT, which is Operation Zero Tolerance, which we've seen. And he wants to destroy mutants, and he's going to build the even better Sentinel to do it. So everything we've seen thus far, all kind of falls under this category. Even in the Forge episode, we saw a brief glimpse. He's covered, but you can see that Bastion and Forge knew each other in a photo. Yes.
Right.
So Forge building a machine for the government that takes away mutants' powers, Bolivar Trask and his master mold building these big sentinels, working with Mr. Sinister, who then uses the sentinels for Genosha, and Sinister going to Bastion and being like, you are doing this wrong. You should go after the mutants once you have all your stuff. And he's like, you've been trying to kill the mutants since 1992, which is when the show premiered, and you haven't done it. So I'm going to do everything the opposite of the way you did, which was a fun nod. But you're seeing how all of these characters are all working together under the same sort of, we're building these giant sentinels to do shit. And so even though the Bastion origin story is a wild origin story, just like with the Madeline Pryor stuff and everything else, it seems like they're taking the essence of it and streamlining this into this thing that makes Henry Gyrick, Bolivar Trask, Mr. Sinister all kind of fall under Bastion, and that we're going to lean into this, and that he knows about Professor X coming back. He's got Magneto, and he's got a plan to basically push the mutants to the edge. And so that, even though if you look up the Bastion story, if you're not as familiar with who he is, you're going to be like, holy shit, what is all this? And if you know who Bastion is, then you know how crazy the whole origin is. But I think we're going to get the streamlined best of version of it for this show.
Yeah, and Theo James does the voice for Bastion. I think he does a nice job introducing that character into X-Men 97. So be curious to see more, what more we're going to get from him as Bastion, and as he gets pushed, how that voiceover works goes down. All right, let's real quick, one last thing, man. So we had a few Easter eggs and cameos here, Michael. We did get the, as you said, Captain America cameo here with Josh Keaton voicing him. Rogue's Cayman Rider Kick was a part of this. General Thunderbolt Ross, as we mentioned, was in this one as well. Amelia Vaught is who Beast is talking to.
Yep.
That doctor there who gets very emotional about talking about the triage and surviving these things. As we said, Trish Tilby was in this one as well. OZT, Operation Zero Tolerance. We have a cameo from Strong Guy.
Strong Guy.
It was pretty awesome stuff as well. Emma Frost's diamond form. We find out the Rogue and Nightcrawler, as they are in the comics, are half siblings. So that was a reference when she said the sister lottery there. Bastion's covered. Nimrod Sentinel is covered. Pingo Dolce, I hope I'm saying that right, is a classic drink from the MCU. The Oppenheimer reference. We see Stark and Hammer signs there in the fight with the Henry Gyrick Sentinel, Human Sentinel there out in Madripoor. And we have Morph transforming into Quicksilver, which was a very fun thing for me.
Yes.
Which one did you like? Which one stood out to you as we wrap up here?
Rogue's kick from the Marvel Capcom games just made me smile because I like, just like the guy who always plays Chun-Li in Street Fighter, I used that kick a lot growing up. Morph turning into Pietro, I loved. Every time Morph turns into like one of our favorite mutants, it makes me very, very happy. And it's a great way to get more mutants in there. Yeah. The Nightcrawler Rogue reference to them being half siblings, I think, is important because we've also heard from the president that nobody's seen Val Cooper.
Yes.
Nobody knows where Val Cooper is. So the fact that they've sort of referenced the we are half siblings because of Mystique here and Val Cooper is still missing puts Val Cooper being Mystique even higher on my list. And then the other thing briefly, I always love seeing like the Hammer Tech, the Stark Tech, the Stark Industries. I think that just makes it feel like it's in the MCU, which is really fun. But the other thing that you touched on briefly, but I want to just end on, I think, is the reveal that Magneto's alive, which a lot of people have been conjecturing, particularly after last week when Professor X had a vision of a dead Gambit, but not a dead Eric. It was like, well, if Eric was dead, that's who Professor X would have seen. So I think that we kind of assumed, glad he's not dead.
Right.
Glad that we're going to get more Magneto. As I said a week or so ago, the Professor X coming back after the events of Genosha and still trying to Professor X, and Magneto after what happened on Genosha, and now that he's being basically tortured or used or whatever, was already, I thought, that those two kind of, again, challenging a Professor X's dream and how far is too far was going to be really interesting. But with Bastion coming into the mix, I'm also going to throw another super weird, confusing thing out there, which is, I don't know if we're maybe building to Onslaught, which in the comics, through very different means, is when the psychic energies of Professor X and Magneto combined to create Onslaught, which was a massive villain in the comics who wanted to have all mutants just destroy all humans and just have the ultimate war of humans and humanity. And if Professor X comes back and fucking loses his shit and Magneto is already being pushed to the brink by Bastion, there's the opportunity that we have this whole three-part finale that's coming up, and we end the season with Professor X and Magneto becoming Onslaught, which will just be absolutely insane. So yeah. I think, again, the fun part about this show is it feels very timely. Yeah. It feels very modern. If you were just a fan of the 90s series, I think you're having a blast. But this is also turning into a best hits of some of the coolest, yet weirdest and most convoluted parts of X-Men mythology, but doing it in a really fun way.
Yeah, it shows a confidence that they know they've got a great story to tell, that they're willing to dive this deep into the nerddom of the X-Men lore and make it work. And they're going to make it work over a three-part sequence of episodes coming up here, which I hope, gives us a great send-off for this first season, and I'm excited to see what we're going to see in those episodes as well. I agree with Magneto. I love the almost a Sweeney Todd aspect of it all, that he's shaving him as he's talking that stuff that he's talking. And the One-Eyed Purple People Eater is a great song from the oldies time there in the 50s and 60s. So enjoy exploring that lyrics in that one as well, which I think have some symbolism for those who want to explore that. All right, well, there you go. Overall, yes, loved it. Really enjoyed it. Great. Let's go. For a guy who's didn't see the animated series, I'm so in knee deep in this series. I'm loving it. Again, bringing back my love of comic books. Now I want to go and find out more of Bastion and Nimrod and all this stuff. So it gets you excited for seeing what's going to come here in the next three episodes for sure. Michael, any final words before we wrap up here?
No, listen, I mean, this was a great episode, but I know that Bo DiMaio on Twitter has said that 8, 9, and 10 are the ones where things really go hard. So I think we are about to get into it. I think this was sort of the, to your point, I think you're this is issue zero for the Tolerance is Extinction story arc that we're about to dive into, is what it felt like. And I think that I am nothing but amped for the last three episodes of this season.
And I hope whoever's going to do the live action X-Men, this is the X-Men you want to see live action. Can you have this kind of gutsiness and this kind of artistry around it and this kind of messaging, please? All right, well, there you go. That's our spoiler review here for episode 7, Bright Eyes of X-Men 97. Thanks so much for joining us. Michael, what do we have to tell them?
If you would like to follow us, you can do so on Twitter at the Geek Buddies, on Instagram at the_geek_buddies. I did it right. Look at that. If you would like to follow Mr. Roka, you could do so at The Roka Says. If you would like to follow me, you can do so at MK Toon. I apologize for the massive noise that I'm going to go pound my head against a brick wall to try and stop the headache that is forming in my head. But while I am doing that, you can smash that like button below, subscribe to Johnny's Outlaw Nation page, leave your comments below, let us know what you thought of this episode. Let us know your theories for the last three episodes. How are you liking this version of the X-Men? What do you think of Bastion? Are you a big Bastion fan? Tell us what we got right and wrong below. Let us know in the comments. If you are listening to us on a podcast, go ahead and leave us some stars and comments so we go up in the rankings. And as always, the best thing you can do is retweet this video, post it on your socials, send it to your friends, and tell them to hang out with your buddies, the Geek Buddies.
There you go. Thank you all so much for joining us, and we'll talk to you with our main show later on this week here from the
Geek
Buddies.
Hello, friends. This is Mark Nell, executive producer of the Table Read podcast, where imagination meets performance. As we wrap up an incredible season one, we want to take a moment to express our heartfelt gratitude to each and every one of you who tuned in and supported us on this amazing journey. Season one was nothing short of extraordinary. We delved into captivating scripts that transported us to worlds beyond our imagination, thanks to the brilliant writers who delivered these works. But what really brought these stories to life were the talents of our amazing actors. But wait, the excitement doesn't end there. As we bid farewell to season one, we are thrilled to announce the launch of season two. Get ready for more gripping narratives, more unforgettable characters, and more mesmerizing performances that will keep you on the edge of your seat. We have some big surprises coming. The Force will definitely be with you. So stay tuned, stay engaged, and most importantly, stay excited. From all of us at the Table Read Podcast, thank you, and let's make season two even more memorable together.